Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Listener production.
Hey, I'm pro surfer
and mental health advocate Cooper Chapman, and this is Good Humans. A lot of us, when we finish high school, have the vision that we want to change the world, but not many of us do anything about it. But not Sam Freaker. Sam's one of Australia's best divers, hopeful for the 2021 Olympics. He's also a huge star on TikTok. But the thing that's most admirable for me is his vision to change the world with single-use plastic straws. He's going to tell you all about his journey, and his mindset is something that you'll be completely inspired by. I can almost guarantee it. Welcome to the podcast, Sam Freaker.
Thanks, Cooper. Now, yeah, it's a pleasure to be here and I'm super excited to get into these some of the things. I think we share such similar views and values, so pumped to be here.
Yeah, so speaking of values, I don't know your story super well, so let's go right to the beginning. Where'd you grow up and what sort of values did your parents instill in you from a young age?
So I grew up in Newcastle and my parents were always really supportive of anything I wanted to do. And as a kid, I got in a lot of trouble in primary school and growing up just in school. But my parents always pushed me to go towards doing the right thing and following my passion. And they always kind of nurtured that. And I think I ran from that a little bit as a kid. But as I got older and started to find my passions, what they kind of tried to push into me as a kid really came back to help me out.
So diving.
Yeah.
In the Australian diving team, it's something that most people are absolutely scared the hell out of. We actually went and did some cliff jumping a couple months back.
And that was good fun.
You're a freak, mate. So how does a young male get into diving in Australia?
Well, there's many ways to go about it. But for me, I actually started because a girl I liked was doing it. And it was like really cold. It was in Nui. I didn't really want to go because it was cold, but she was there. So I just went and I wasn't very good, but eventually I started to get a little bit better and then I started to love it.
So how old were you when that moment sort of happened?
I was like 12, probably 11, 12 then.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
before high school.
Yeah. So diving, what's sort of the transition? So you just start jumping off diving boards and then how do you transition into it being an actual sport to compete in?
Yeah. So it's when you see the final product, you can may look at it and be like, oh, like how do you get there? But like anything, you start with the basics. You do a jump, then you do a forward dive, a front summy, a front 1.5, 2.5, all the way up to what I do now is like a front 4.5. So it's slowly every step of the way. You might add half a flip or half a twist and you just keep it to your own abilities until you can do the big stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched some of your clips, especially on TikTok and Instagram, which we will get to a little bit later because you're an absolute star on there. But yeah, talk me through your process when it comes to fear with diving because that's something that I don't even know if I jump off the 10-meter board. And like you said, you're doing 4.5 spins now off the board. What stage does fear creep in or is it a pretty gradual thing when you're building up skills?
So the fear is always kind of relative to what you're doing. So when I first learned a front 2.5, I found that quite scary. And that probably just as scary as I find maybe a front 4.5 today. So it's all kind of relative to what you're doing, but the fear is always, it's always present and it's about how you deal with it.
Okay.
And if any diver tells you they're not scared, they're lying.
Interesting. So how do you deal with it? What's your process? Yeah. You're walking up the, give me that mindset. So you're walking up the stairs to the 10-meter board. What goes through your head before going up for even a practice dive?
So when I'm walking up, I'm really focusing on what dive I'm doing. And I have keywords, key points for each dive that I need to think about just to make sure I can hit it and keep it simple. That you want to keep things super simple. So for me, it's just keeping my keywords nice and clear and visualization. If I can feel the dive before I go, I'm set.
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing. And I've spoken previously in this podcast to people about visualization. Yeah. Wade Carmichael comes to mind. Yeah. He's a guy that you wouldn't expect to think about visualization, but I think it's something that comes across on a lot of sports and a lot of different successful people is visualization. When did you first become aware of visualization and what sort of effects and how important is it to you when it comes to diving?
Oh, I reckon visualization would be in the top three, like most important things for diving, but even for life in everything you do, if you can't see where you want to go, how are you going to get there?
Yeah, I like that. A lot of wisdom from that.
I'm just sitting there drinking me coffee. Loving it. No, it's visualization is super important. So whether it's my dive that I need to visualize how it's going to feel when I go through the water and get it right, or how I'm going to feel when I win, like those visualizations are so essential. So essential.
Yeah, and I love the way you can see how passionate you are speaking about it, and you speak so well and it's for such a young age. It's really impressive. But with diving, you've just come from training this morning. It's 9 o'clock in the morning here, and you were telling me that you've got to go back after this and train again. So a lot of dedication goes into the sport. Talk me through an average day of training and then a whole week of training, what it looks like for an 18-year-old Olympic diver who's just finished school.
Yeah, well, it's pretty hectic. Now, a lot of people think now I'm done school, I'm kind of sitting at home. But things are more intense than ever. So I get up in the morning, 5 a.m., drive to train. Now, I live an hour away from the pool, so I train from 6 to 8. After training, I go straight to business meetings and business stuff I need to do. So at the moment, I've been going to Mossman a lot for a lot of meetings and stuff like that to progress with the straws. And then after that, I do that nearly all day business stuff, head back over to the pool, have my second session. And then after training, I either try and film some social media stuff for that side or I have work. So I'll usually train from 3 till 6 and then I normally coach from 6 till 8 as well for a bit of money.
Wow.
And I love it. And then I drive home, sleep, and then it's most repeat for those days or the weekdays.
Not your typical 18-year-old, I can tell you that much. And I can't wait after this chat. I'm so inspired to actually pick up my game with my business stuff because that's your week sounds a lot busier than my week. I'm just kind of surfing and I mean, I definitely put in a lot of time as well, but it's really inspiring hearing someone of your age being so switched on and so dedicated to not only your sport, but your business, which we will talk about a little bit later because that's something I'm so excited to talk to you about because it's really impressive what you're doing with the straw business.
Oh, thank you.
But let's talk about a competition. So I don't know that much about diving and I'm sure a lot of our listeners probably won't. So rocking up to a competition, what does it look like? How many competitors are you going up against and what sort of mindset is needed to take out a competition in a diving event?
Okay, so going to a big international competition, we have between like 40, 50 competitors, sometimes 60. And the biggest thing with that is you go wait sometimes 50 minutes in between dives. So when you're going there, you've got to really be, for me, everyone's different, but for me personally, I need to be in the mindset of I need to feel good about myself and my diving for me to compete well. I need to get enough sleep and I need to be trained consistently. And if I can have all those three things, I'll feel great going into a competition. And then going to the comp, I just need to keep my keywords clear, keep everything super simple and just kind of rely on my training, but also keep up my visualization. I heighten my visualization around competition and my mental kind of training.
Yeah. So let's talk me through one of those dives. I want to like get step by step.
Okay.
You're walking out of the room, you wipe yourself down with the towel,
all right.
Got the sluggos on.
Rocking those speedos.
But yeah, so all the training's done.
Yeah.
On competition day, how do you settle the nerves? How do you get yourself in that prime mindset to compete?
Ooh, after warm up, I like to have a laugh with my coach. Just joke around, a bit of banter, take the piss a bit. Just because when I laugh, that's when I'm happy, I do my best. So I try to take you're not going to forget you're in a competition. So when I'm sitting there competing, I know like what I got to do. So when I'm just bantering with my coach, that kind of puts me in a position where it takes away like the total stress and it puts me in a position where I feel like I can compete happy and do my best. So kind of just have a laugh.
Yeah, I like that. Just taking the pressure off by just not taking things too seriously.
Yeah,
it's such an important thing in life, just realizing that it's not the be all and end all. Competitions are so important, but one competition that is probably the most important on the calendar is the Olympics. Nobody can overlook the Olympics and you're looking like potentially in the team for the Olympics in Tokyo 2021. What
What goes through your head? Is there different preparation? Are you nervous for that? Are you more prepared? Are you less prepared? Or is it just same going over the repetitive mindset before the biggest event probably of your life?
Now, of course, like ever since I was a kid, all I wanted to do was go to the Olympics. And although I didn't know I was going to be a diver as a kid, like I wanted to go to the Olympics for something. And when, yeah, of course, diving's what we're aiming for now. But you can't, you take every competition kind of the same. Like you're always trying to do your best. So I'm going to go in with the same mental kind of strategies and training that I've done before. The only difference is the training is going to be more tapered towards this event. And I'm just going to make sure I do everything, use every tool in my toolbox to put the best fight I can to be on that team.
Yeah, it's just always about controlling the controllables. It's something that comes across all sports. And for me in surfing, it's really important to control the controllables with such a...
Especially with the uncontrollable waves. Like you're in such an uncontrolled... Well, for me, where diving is just like fixed 10 meter. Like you're in an uncontrolled environment.
Yeah, it's a bit different for me, but I'm not talking about me today. I'm talking about you. And it's so cool to see you getting involved in that. What are the other competitors like? Is there a lot of rivalry or is it pretty much, all right, all you can do is go out there and do your best? And is there like hoping that people stuff up?
Yeah, look, people are. But if you're worried about someone else stuffing up, you're not thinking about yourself, which means you might be trying to think about someone else stuffing up, but you may not be focusing on yourself. So then you can't do your best and win. So for me, and we've all fallen down the path of like, oh, if he does this and I can do that. And we've all been there. But for me, and it's not easy, but you've got to try and focus on yourself and what you can do. Because at the end of the day, if you put down, well, for me, if I put down my best dives, I know like I can come out on top. And it's about me putting down my best dives, not worrying about what Jacko is doing.
Yeah, I like that. It's a really mature approach. And
it's
hard though.
Like it's, and sometimes I struggle with that, but like that's the goal.
Yeah. So tell me, when you do struggle with that, how do you overcome that? Because being so young, 18 years old, it is a real maturity thing. I felt like when I was competing, unfortunately, when I was probably your age and I was traveling the world, I probably had a bit more ego than I would have liked to, and I wasn't as humble as, say, I am now. But I used to, when I'd travel around the world, kids or like my mates would... Yeah. I would lose in an event and then I'd be like, oh, I'd almost want my mates to lose because I didn't want them to do way better than me. Whereas now I'm kind of like, screw that. Like it's the best thing ever watching your mates do really good. So what's your process to try and, for one, focus on your own game, but for two, just be excited to watch other people do their best because it means you're going to have to do better, which is in the long run better for you anyway.
Oh, that's so raw what you're saying there. It's every athlete's experienced that. Because when you're not doing your best, it's hard because when you're feeling good, you're like, oh, yeah, I want everyone to do well as well. But, yeah, when you're not doing your best, it's challenging. And I think, every athlete has experienced that to some extent.
Yeah, well, mature approach. I'm rooting for the Olympics, but, man, it's been a wild year. 2020, unbelievable stuff going on. You were doing your HSC and, man – tell me about the HSC. What was your experience like studying for the HSC, going through the trials and going through the exams?
So I do a lot of driving. So for studying for the HSC, I listened to a lot of podcasts on the topics and subjects I was doing. And that was kind of my way of studying, listening to lectures and podcasts and everything about my subjects because I could drive and listen because I'm so time poor. And I found that super effective because then when I went to sit the exams, I felt more comfortable knowing that I'd done everything I could. And I feel like I put my absolute best foot forward. It was hard with training, diving, the business and trying to do my social stuff as well. But I think I got through it well and everyone using my support network is super important because when like it was a stressful time, and it's really important to have those guys there. It was really important for me so I could chat to people about it.
Yeah, so let's dig into that a little bit more. So having that support network is so important when it comes to studying, 100%. But when it comes to any part of your life, having people to lean on when you need help and not having guilt asking for help. Mm-hmm. What's your process when obviously you're so time poor and you've got so many things on your plate and the HSC is obviously probably one of the most important things we do in our young life. Mm-hmm. What sort of support network did you have around you and what sort of questions were you asking them and support were you asking from them?
Yeah, so... number one, I got my friends and they're people, I keep my friend group pretty tight because you, friendship is really like give and take. You look out for your friends and they look after you too. And I always lean on those guys and I always help them out as well whenever we can. And then we're always there for each other. So I always feel comfortable talking to them about anything I'm struggling with and then getting through it together. You've then also got your family and I got like some mentors, some older people I talk to that help me out as well. You know, a bit of perspective, a bit more life experience to really bring things back to, you know, perspective of this isn't the end of the world if this doesn't go to plan.
The two things that I'm really excited to talk to you about, social media. You're an absolute whiz on TikTok. The kid who does backflips everywhere he goes. Tell me about your rise on TikTok and what that platform's done for your life, but done for just like your happiness. And it just seems like you're always having a good time on there.
Yeah, well, I'm a happy guy. Like, so I just spread my positivity and the fun I'm having with my friends and that. Like, I go out and I just, like, I hang with good people like yourself and like we're just vibing and then we make some content and I think people love it because, you know, they just want to have good vibes as well. So I started TikTok originally. My sister showed me how to make some videos and like I saw the ads. Like we all had a bit of skepticism about it at the start. It was like, oh, TikTok. But then, you know, once you get on it, it's like, oh, it's number one, it's super addictive. And my sister helped me make a video. I made them with her. My initial videos all with her because I didn't know what I was doing. And I got like 10 views and then like 100 and 500. I got 500 views. I was like, oh, that's sick. Like that's 500 views I never would have gotten anywhere else. And then I just kept posting. And then I eventually had a diving video that took off. It's like 100K. And I was like, oh, people actually want to see diving on here? So then I just kept.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Posting diving and then I expanded to flips, you know, things about diving. I put in my straws and now I just post everything I do and I just put it out there because I use the analogy of throwing the fishing rod. If you got nothing in the water, you can't get anything. So I just keep throwing the fishing rod, you know, set the crab chats, put the net in the water, just post it all. Like, what do you got to lose?
Mate, I love that. But some people don't have that mindset. When you say, what do you got to lose? It's a really big problem today in society with young people being really scared to post stuff because of criticism. What's it been like for you with online bullying and criticism? Yeah. Because like you said, you're throwing a lot of crab traps out there and you're going to be catching some of the wrong people. So give me some stories. I'm sure you've got some stories of some bad online bullying.
I feel like I've copped most of it, you know. But I don't really care because the way I see it is I keep my friends close. They're the people that know me. I value what they say. You know, if Cooper comes up to me, he's like, you know, Sam, what you did there probably wasn't above board. You should probably think about that. Maybe change your approach. I'm like, okay, you know, I should probably do that. And I'm going to take it seriously. But if Jacko with two followers, you know, who's he? I don't care. He doesn't even know me. It's really important, the people you have around you. That's what matters.
Yeah, and it's such a mature way to look at it. And I love that. But some people really struggle with that. And I get times, and I'm sure there's been times where it's hard to get somebody, death threats are one thing, but even people just ridiculing what you're doing and something that you probably believe in so much.
Like they take the piss out of diving, the way I talk, the way I look, anything. But it's, you know, like, it's just, it, and it, you know, it can hurt. And if I sat there reading it all day, it wouldn't be healthy. So, you know, 9 times out of 10, I won't check the comments. And if I do, I just don't take too much notice of it because it really is about, you know, your circle and what your friends think about you because they're the ones that really know you.
Yeah, I love that. Having that really close core group of friends around you is so important. And what sort of advice do you have for a kid trying to grow a social media account and trying to navigate through that bullying minefield that there is out there?
Yeah, and it's challenging because I've also had like so much, I've built such mental strength from diving and everything else I've done in life. Like things haven't been given to me. I've had to work for them. And I think when you've had the challenge in most, if you can challenge yourself everywhere else in your life and keep a mindset of like not quitting, not giving up, and just giving it everything you got everywhere you can, like giving it, if you do your best everywhere you can, I think that trickles down all over your life. And then that can follow the social media. So if you're staying strong everywhere, I think dealing with the hate, which is a small thing that can be a really big thing, then it can be all right.
Yeah, definitely. And there's so many people that are just out there being cruel just because it's generally a reflection on what's going on in their lives.
Yeah, like even if I saw something I disagree with, like I'm not going to spend time spreading hate.
Yeah, some people's mindsets are just – and I feel sorry for people like that sometimes because like they're obviously so sad with their life and they're trying to make your happy life back down to their level, and it's just a weird mindset. But it's –
and they miss the point too. Like if you want to be like – happy and energetic, like hang out with happy and energetic people.
Yeah.
And then you shoot yourself in the foot by bagging them all out. Like who you got?
Yeah. Oh, that's so, mate. The more I talk to you, the more like you are far beyond an 18-year-old. And it's so awesome to hear about the sort of stuff that you talk about. But the one thing that I'm really excited to talk to you about, 18 years old, full entrepreneur, and you touched on it before. Tell me about your straw business, mate.
Oh, the wheat straws. Now, I love the wheat straws. It's a real solution to an actual problem. Now, paper straws piss me off. They're so annoying and they're bad for the environment. And then you've got, you know, metal straws, which suck because they get hot. They're not clean. COVID, like no one wants to use a straw everyone's drinking out of. The wheat straws, they're biodegradable straws and they're a byproduct of the grain we grow to eat. So why not switch to something that's going to help all of us?
You didn't even touch on plastic straws. What do you think of them?
Oh, I don't even think they deserve a mention. Plastic straws biodegrade the microplastics. Mine biodegrade the micronutrients.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. So let's talk a little bit more about it. So what stage did you want to start this straw business? For anyone, so wheat straws are made from wheat, obviously.
Yeah, how do you get into that? So I was going to sell like the metal straw. What really affected me was the plastic straw in the turtle's nose. Have you seen that video?
Yeah, I have seen that. And they try and pull it out with they pull it out with the tweezers and it just keeps coming. It's painful. I did see that video.
It hurts to watch. And to see like the pain in its eyes and like the feeling, like it really got my emotions. And I was like, you know, like, plastic straws, we use billions, like hundreds of billions a year all over the world. We use 10 million a day here in Australia. And they just go out there. But that's one incident we have on camera. There would be so many more that we don't. So the straws are like, all right, like we can, like there's a solution to this. The Chinese have been using wheat straws for thousands of years, like before. So we swapped over the plastic because it was cheaper, and then paper is more expensive, but it doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
How about a paper straw?
Oh, they generally frustrates me. Yeah.
Banana smoothie through a paper straw.
You can't even finish your drink. Like,
it's a race to the bottom.
Yeah. Like if anyone else sold a product that didn't work, they wouldn't get away with it.
Yeah.
But it's because it's seen as having a good environmental impact.
Okay. So where did you come up with wheat straws and how does an 18-year-old start a business? Did you start it as well?
Yeah,
you must have been younger.
The beginning of 2019.
Okay.
And it was the 1st of Jan, came across the wheat straws from the Chinese. The Chinese have been using them for a long time and we moved away from them. And so I was looking into metal straws. That's how I came across the wheat straws idea because you got bamboo, pasta, but they all have their downsides. Bamboo is in between like a single and multi-use straw, like, but it goes a bit rotty in the inside after you use it. So, and then you've got, you know, pasta, but pasta's all slimy, you know, it's not very nice. So the idea... Yeah, it came from the Chinese using them. And then to start a business, like I genuinely had no idea. I had no idea. So I just, online courses, YouTube. You can learn anything on YouTube. That's how I started the company.
Wow. So YouTube. I need to start doing a bit more YouTubing for the Good Human Factory. But so what's the process? Was it completely you? Did you get some help from anyone outside of yourself?
So you can't legally set up a company under 18. So I had to get mum to help me with that for a couple of reasons. You're under 18, just tax things. Had to get the company in mum's name initially. So mum helped me out with that, which was fantastic. And then, I just sourced the straws, got them made, started supplying venues. And I started off with retail. Retail was where I thought would have the biggest impact and I was so wrong. Wholesale is where I wanted to go. And that's where I'm moving towards now because you can sell – here's the thing, because the best I can do is – get more straws out there. It's good for me. It's good for you. It's good for all of us because we're taking plastic out. So if I can get a 200 pack to one family, that's good. But if I can sell a million straws to a venue that's going to use it for a million people, that's even better because then we're keeping the million straws out. So wholesale is where I'm going.
Yeah, I love that. And so a wheat straw feels almost like a plastic straw. I've been using them quite a bit and I love them, but it feels almost like a plastic straw. And like you said, single use, but
yeah,
you can just throw them in the bin and they're full bio-nutrient. Yeah, so yeah, talk me through the environmental impact that the wheat straws have.
Or the lack thereof. So the wheat straws are-
positive environmental impact.
Yeah, yeah. Like the wheat straws are grown for grain, for food. And then usually the stems would be mulched up, thrown away.
So it's a waste product anyway.
It's a waste product.
Wow.
We're using a whole like circular economy here. And then the straws are then, you know, like used for drinking. And then once you're done, they just biodegrade. Because just like a tree falls down, biodegrades, these stems do as well.
Yeah, and like you said, it's a you found a gap almost that all these probably straws are probably getting thrown out. So like you said, trying to get into a million venues, what are your goals with the business? And give it a bit of a play. What is it to say?
Right, so it's Sarian and I recently saw Mark Burris and he was like, the name shit. And I was like, right, I'm changing it to Sam's Wheat Straws. So I'm in the moment of rebranding.
Yep.
I saw Dick Smith as well and he suggested changing over to Sam's Wheat Straws as well. That was just my lack of experience when I started the business of putting a name that was hard to remember. And that's something you shouldn't do because if you want people to remember the name, like yours is great, the Good Human Factory, people remember that. And three words is really what you need because it stays in people's mind.
Yeah. So what sort of advice, so you mentioned Mark Burris, Dick Smith, two very recognizable names in Australian business. How did you, give me your story on how you became, for one, to meet Dick Smith, yeah. And then you were touching on it before we started this podcast, the Mark Burris story. You got to tell me that on podcast because he has a podcast with Podcast One also. Yeah. And I think it's a great story because people like you who are young and willing to not take risks, but just put themselves out there, that's how you can make big impacts in the world. And that's how you can create opportunities that you don't have to wait for opportunities. You got to go find them. And tell me how you find those opportunities.
100%. Well, just not same with the social media. That mentality of throwing the fishing rod, just throwing it, get in the water, see what happens. That's the same with business. Like, reach out. Like, you got nothing to lose. There's been people I've reached out and haven't applied. Like, no worries. Or being like, you know, like go away.
Yeah. But how do you handle rejection? Because that's a good one. A lot of people I feel like are scared to do that because of rejection. How do you handle rejection?
You just keep going. You know, JMO said no, try Jacko. Keep going. It's not like, oh, yay, I got rejected. But it's like, okay, like that sucks. I'm going to keep going.
Yeah.
Because you have your vision, your goal, the visualization. It's like, okay, I can see where I want to go. And then I feel like if you keep that in mind, where you want to go, things kind of fall into place. It leads you there if you keep going.
Yeah, for sure. It's just about keep trudging on. So
even when things are hard, like they don't make sense.
Yeah, so you would have had some speed bumps, eh? Starting a small business is not easy. I can attest for that. But what's been some of your – I mean, actually, let's go back to the story. How'd you meet Dick Smith?
Okay, so I was in COVID. I was like, right, straw sales have dropped off because all the venues I supply are closed. What can I do? And I was thinking, I was like, all right, I used to see Dick Smith. I used to go into his shops as a kid. I was like, all right, where's Dick live? He lives in, probably don't give his address. I was like, all right, I'm going to write him a letter. So I wrote a letter, an actual letter. Now, I've never written a letter before. I didn't even know how to put a stamp on it, but I figured it out through YouTube. And I wrote this letter. I put some photos of me in it. And I was like, I love Dick because I saw him a lot as a kid and his shops, he was on the news. Like he was like an inspiration of mine. So I made this letter. I figured out how to put a stamp and send a letter through YouTube and I posted it. I waited a month, maybe a month and a half. And then I was at school. So after COVID, back at school, I get a call in class. I answer. He's like, Sam, it's Dick. I was like, Dick, like Dick Smith? I was like, yeah, it's Dick Smith. I was like, shit, Dick, I'm in class. I reckon I can give you a call back in 2 minutes. He's like, no worries. Give me a call back. And I was just so blown away. I was like, what? Like Dick Smith, at lunch, I went and gave him a call. And he's just an absolute. Now, I had high expectations for this guy and he just absolutely blew them out of the water. He is a living legend. Like, so much respect for that man. And anyway, we set up a time to meet and he gave me, like, he was really generous with his time. And I was really appreciative of that. So I sat down with him. I went to his house and we spoke for a couple of hours about the business, about his business, about what he'd done. And it was just so inspirational. And just as I like to hang out with great people like yourself. Being able to sit down with great people like Dick Smith, it really has such a profound effect on you thinking bigger and wanting to do better.
Yeah.
And seeing that you can, like seeing someone who's done it.
So you sat down with him and had a bit of a business meeting, a bit of a mentor meeting around where you could take the wheat straw business?
Yeah, and about so initially it was about my wheat straws, but then I started asking questions about his life and what he'd done and some of the things, like some things I saw on TV as a kid. I was like, how did he pull that off? Like he just went out there and got it. And just as you just go, just send it. Like he like did things like pulled in an iceberg, like he like a hoax where he told the world he was pulling in an iceberg. And it was just a tarp and it got all the media attention, but he just did it. Yeah. He just did it. And recently I was talking to Valerie Taylor and she was saying the same, like, Sam, you just got to do it. Like, don't wait for someone. Like, don't wait for someone to give you the money to do it. Just do it. Just figure it out. And it's not easy, but you just do it.
Mate, it's been so awesome getting to have a chat. The way that your outlook on life is so mature for your age. And the question that I always like to ask, the last question to all of my guests is, what does being a good human, because you have one bloody hell of a good human, Sammy Fricker. So what does being a good human mean to Sam Fricker?
I think it's always putting your best foot forward, and I always spread positivity, like be kind to everyone, like genuinely give a shit. Like I genuinely care about my friends. And if you really care about the people around you, it just makes the world a better place because you're looking out for each other. Like, do the right thing. I like this saying for me, and it might sound stupid, but the right thing to do is it's always the right thing to do.
Yeah, I love that. And you can always feel it. This is something that I talk a lot about.
Intuition, right?
Yeah.
You can sit there.
Yeah, it feels right. And I talk about it a lot in my workshops with the Good Human Factory to the kids is I felt like when I was your age, I knew when I was doing stuff that wasn't right, that didn't sit right with me, that wasn't my philosophy.
Well, you know you shouldn't be there.
But I kept doing it and I did do it quite a lot. And I feel like it's fine. We all do that. Like we were talking about a little bit earlier with the competition side of things. We slip up and that's fine, but it's being aware and reflecting and knowing when you are. And it sounds like you've got such a mature approach to it. And man, I'm glad that I get to call you a friend because with an outlook like that, you rub off on people like myself and like the community around you to be better people as well. So mate, thank you so much for sitting down, coming over to my place, having a chat and really, really excited to share this podcast with people. And hopefully everyone listening can be a bit more educated around wheat straws and the impact they have on the environment. And if you have a supply company and you want to buy some straws, make sure you get in touch. Sam Fricker will leave some stuff on socials so you can find where Sam is and where his straws are. Hopefully by the time this podcast is out, it'll be rebranded and I'm looking Sam's forward to it. Straws. I'll be pushing it real hard. So Sam's Wheat Straws, check it out. So
no, thanks for having me on. Absolute pleasure. And it's hanging around good people is it's how you achieve your dreams.
Yeah.
Good Humans was presented by me, Cooper Chapman. Producer, Alex Mitchell. Audio production by Darcy Thompson.
Listener.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.